Well, good morning, PCC. My name is Andrew. I'm the student ministry pastor here. And I just want to start things off by saying, guys, we did it. It's week one of the sabbatical. And if you look around, the church is still standing. We have not burned it to the ground yet. It's all good. And personally, for me, that's a huge win. Okay, so don't downplay that. That's big. We got to celebrate that. Well, like I said, this is the first week of Jim's sabbatical, and I figured since you're going to be seeing a little bit more of me, it's probably best if I start off with just a quick story. As some of you know, because you guys graciously gave us amazing gifts, so thank you, I actually got married this year, and I got married to just the wonderful, beautiful Katie McGregor, as you'll soon see in a picture right here. Should I now say Katie Stafiri? And so... It's amazing, but at the same time, as you might wonder or think, getting married in 2020 would present some challenges, would present some differences. And it's true. There's often times where we're left wondering, making it smaller than we thought, or restrictions we had never even thought of or planned of. But through it all, God was good, and He brought us to stay. As I was thinking about it, though, there's often a story within the wedding that comes to my mind. And I think it's so special to me because in a day that's all about you and all about your wife, sometimes there's moments that are about other people that make such a big impact. And so leading up to the wedding, Katie and I were trying to come up with ways that we could thank our parents for all that they had done. And so we're brainstorming and we're thinking, and we're going through all these ideas when suddenly one hits us. And it hits us specifically for her parents. And we're like, this is it. This is way better than anything we have. And this is better than anything we could ever come up with for my parents. So Mom, Dad, if you're watching at home, I'm sorry. It wasn't as good for you, but that's just how it works sometimes. And so what we planned was we were going to surprise them. And we were going to surprise everyone at the wedding. We were going to secretly hire a mariachi band to come in and play their very first dance. And so with no warning, all of a sudden, during the reception, you hear Sabora Me start playing in the distance. And it comes closer and it comes closer, and all of a sudden there's a mariachi band standing on a balcony over us, serenading with this music. And right when it happens, I immediately look at her mom, and I see as all the emotions and even then the memories start coming back to her. And you see really as these tears start falling, and I'm thinking in my head, oh no, if she starts crying, then I'm going to start crying, then Katie's going to start crying, and now we have this moment. But I think it's so special, not only because of how intimate it was, but really because it was such a small action in this grand scope of the day that had such a big impact on someone. And so my hope for you is that while I'm telling that story, just a part of you is drifting back a little bit and trying to think of your own moment. A moment that could be a surprise like us, or could be a part of a wedding, or something that may have been seemingly small and yet had a big impact in someone's life. And the reason I say this is because I think we often miss that God is at work, even in the little things. And that's where I want to take us today, because today we are starting a brand new series. It's called Better, Jesus Is. And what it is we're looking at the seven miracles that take place in the Gospel of John. Now, I know while I say that, there's at least a few people that are wondering, why are we doing this? Didn't we just spend the last 700 weeks in Matthew? Now all of a sudden we're going to John. Is this some sort of scheme or build-off series or a coup? What's going on? And quite frankly, just to say, I got to choose. And so I chose this. And the reason I did is because John, the Gospel of John, it has a special place in my heart. See, John was written after Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And it was, scholars say that it was written with him knowing that these other books most likely existed and were circulated. And so John decided to write his gospel even though he knew there were other accounts of Jesus. And I think what that does is it leads to it being just a little bit different in some of its writing styles or the what you see than the other Gospels. See, John's a little more theological, that's for sure. Just open to John 1 and try to read that, right? Instead of a nativity scene, you get this really complex statement that you could spend all day studying and looking at. But I think more than that, John's called the intimate gospel. See, John's written by the self-described disciple whom Jesus loved. He's in the inner circle. And it's in this intimacy that he wants to show us Jesus in the way that he sees him. And so, as for why we're doing the miracles in John, again, it's because I didn't want to spend another 700 weeks in here. I wanted us to look at these seven instances as they build. And so, in the four Gospels, there's 34 different miracle accounts, and they're all, 34 distinct miracle accounts, as well as some that went unrecorded. But within John, as I said, there's seven. And each of them builds off one another, each displaying another part of Jesus' character and Jesus' power. And they all build towards the final miracle, the history-changing miracle, that is the resurrection. Today, though, we're going to start with the first one. We're going to start with miracle number one. And this miracle is in no way as eye-opening as the resurrection. In fact, when it happened, many people didn't notice. And I think today, oftentimes, we skip over it pretty easily, right? We don't pay attention to it as well. And that's because this miracle, like I said, John's a little different. This miracle isn't the birth, right? I know we have Christmas, and that's not something we pass up. But this miracle, instead, it takes place 30 years later, 30 years into the life of Jesus, 30 years of this best-kept secret, and now everything is about to come out. So if you can, turn to John chapter 2. That's where we're going to be today. We're going to be in John chapter 2 as we look at this first miracle. This first miracle, 30 years after the birth of Christ, here it is. And this is important because, like I said, it's the first one, which means Clark Kent's taking off the glasses, or Vision is losing the human kind of makeup. He's now revealing himself, and the secret's about to come out, at least only sort of. So John chapter 2, starting in verse 1, it says this: "On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, 'They have no wine.'" All right, I'm stopping here for just a quick second, because in these just first three verses, we get our setting and we get our problem. See, this miracle takes place at a wedding. But unlike my wedding, this one looks way different, not just because of the whole COVID ordeal, but because of the whole cultural differences as well. See, back then, I'd like to say they knew how to party. They knew how to do it right. While we have weddings that last a couple of hours, back then they had weddings that lasted a couple of days or weeks. And if you thought your wedding was big, imagine the fact that they would get the whole town that they lived in involved. And so this celebration is a big deal. It's a big thing. It's the highlight of their life, and it's the highlight of the town as well. So running out of wine at this kind of party, it wasn't just inconvenient. It's not like running out of ice. This was a social disaster, and it was something that actually their family would have to carry with them, because the whole town was going, and so that shame would last. Not just that, but I think it's something that the newlyweds would have to take into their marriage. That is not the way you want to start off a marriage. Sometimes I imagine the scene a little bit, just because I'm weird that way, but I think of it, and I just get scared, because I imagine the look on the bride's face when she hears that, and she's like, "You had one job, dude. You had one job. I planned the flowers. I got the table arrangements. I even did the food. You had one job, and that's because you knew the right brand. But you couldn't do that." That's scary. That's a scary thought as a husband right here. But that's the culture, right? That was the culture that they lived in. Because for them, wine was essential. And it wasn't essential just so that people could get drunk or treat it irresponsibly, or so it could be make the party more exciting. It was essential, actually, because it was a symbol for the celebration itself. And in the Jewish life, wine was a metaphor for joy. And so for this party, their joy is running dry. Their joy is running out. And so what's happening in this passage, I think, is actually quite bigger than it may seem. Because for this family and for these newlyweds, all of a sudden their joy is gone and they're left needing a miracle. And if I'm honest with you, I think that there's a lot of that going around right now as well. There's a lot of us feeling like our joy is running dry. Maybe after this 2020, you're starting to wonder where your joy is. You're starting to feel those empty jars. Maybe your career has gotten off really stressful in the last year. You're wondering if you're in the right spot. For others, maybe it's gotten cut completely, and that's the new stress that you have to deal with. Some of us, it could be our relationships. Spending so much time together, has your family or your marriage, has it grown dry? Have you wondered where to go to? For others, it's our faith. Our faith has felt differently lately. Are we just going through the motions, or is there more that's happening beyond the scene? I think, thankfully, as we see in the story coming up, Mary actually gets a little advice for us. And it's a pretty simple advice, I would hope, coming from a church, but it's very important. It's go to Jesus. Turn back to verse 3. We'll read it a second time. It says this: "When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, 'They have no wine.' And Jesus said to her, 'Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? Because my hour has not yet come.' His mother said to his servants, 'Do whatever he tells you.'" All right, quick sidebar again. I'd like to think that Jesus probably knew what he was capable of from an early age. And at the same time, I'd like to think that Mary probably did as well. I mean, she was pretty involved in that whole nativity scene. And so what happens here, I think, points to Mary knowing about Jesus. And so we should really highlight that and highlight Mary. See, in this moment, as I described, of just shame and stress and finger pointing, what Mary does is she turns to Jesus. And she turns to him not knowing what he's going to do, and yet still trusts him. Secondly, I think it's what Mary doesn't do here that's actually equally as important. Because in this moment, like I said, Mary turns to Jesus, and that's very important, and that needs to be celebrated. That's like the first takeaway we need, right? When our joy is running dry, first and foremost, turn to Jesus. But the second thing she does, I think, is the step that we struggle with the most. Because what she does here is she doesn't tell Jesus what to do or how to do it. She simply identifies the problem, and she gets Jesus involved. She really says so much here with so little. In my translation, it's four words, right? They have no wine. And then she basically steps back and lets Jesus take over. I think that's where we struggle, right? We're okay getting Jesus involved, but we want to get Jesus involved on our own terms, right? Jesus, I'm feeling my joy running dry here. Can you do this, this, and this for me? But what's happening in this story is quite contrary. Mary just identifies the problem and takes a step back. And that kind of leads to the miracle. Verse 6, we get the rest of the story. So this is this: "Now standing there were six stone jars of water for the Jewish rites of purification, each of them holding about 20 to 30 gallons. And Jesus said to them, 'Fill the jars with water.'" Pretty simple. "And they filled them up to the brim. He said to them, 'Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward.' So they took it. When the steward tasted the water had become wine, he did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. The steward called the bridegroom and said, 'Everyone serves the good wine first, and then the inferior wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you've kept the good stuff until now.' Jesus did this, the first of his signs in Cana of Galilee, to reveal his glory, and his disciples believed in him. After this, he went down to Capernaum with his mother and his brothers and his disciples, and they remained there for a few days." So that interaction with Mary leads to now a bigger thing and leads to really the miracle that happens. And it's that interaction that kind of gets things started, right? Because while it feels weird, right, sometimes we read Jesus' response, it feels a little weird to us, but the reality is we should take the heart of what happens. Because what Jesus does is he makes Mary's problem his problem. Jesus was in no way involved in all the mess that was happening, and yet he involved himself instead. I think that's important because Jesus gets into this messy situation, and when I think about it, I spend so much of my time trying to avoid these kind of messy situations, and yet Jesus just kind of dives in. I think that leads us to our big idea, or our Jesus is, for this miracle. And it's simply this: Jesus is invested, right? Jesus is invested. He's invested in all aspects of our life. He's invested in the big things and in the small things. But I think too many of us think that Jesus is just too busy to be aware of the smaller aspects of our lives. Or worse, we may even think that he just wants to secure us for heaven, and then he kind of has to move on, right? Because he's got other people to save, wars to stop, or children to feed. But I think what this story shows us is that Jesus is in fact invested. He's invested in the smaller details of our lives as well. Jesus is invested in that important work meeting you have coming up. He's invested in that uncomfortable conversation you want to have with a friend. He's invested in your family life. He's invested in the school decision you have coming up. Jesus is invested. And he's invested in the little things. While I was studying, I came across a story that I thought was so perfect because it was so small and yet hit this note so well. So I just want to read it for you just real quick. It comes from a lady who was the director of the Birmingham Dream Center. And she tells a story a little bit like this. It says, one morning, she was walking out the front door on her way to work when all of a sudden she felt a prompting to go back in and grab a pair of woolly socks. Thinking that was a strange idea, she thought it might just become important, and so she went back and grabbed the socks. Well, she tucked them in her purse, and she drove down to the Dream Center. When she arrived there, what she noticed was a woman passed out on the front steps. She ended up carrying this woman inside and calling 911. When the woman regained consciousness, the director asked her, "How can I help you? Is there anything I can do?" Without hesitation, the shivering woman just said, "You don't happen to have a pair of woolly socks, do you?" It's so weird and so random. What are the chances? Something so small in that moment of need, that's what you call attention to? But she tells the rest of the story is that's when she reached in her purse and pulled out the woolly socks. And the woman who was hurt smiled and said, "They even match my outfit." It's funny. God's at work in the small things. Jesus is invested. He's invested in all aspects of life, even the things that we don't always think he is. And even in the ways that we often don't see. Do me a favor, take a look back at verse 9 and 10, and you kind of see what happens in the story of this element where people just kind of miss it. People almost miss the miracle. That's why I said Jesus is revealing himself, but only kind of. Seemed to go over a lot of people's heads. Verse 9, it says, "When the steward tasted the water had become wine, and he did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the wine did, he called the groom, and he said to him, 'Everyone serves the good wine first, and then the inferior wine after the guests have had too much. But you've kept the good wine until now.'" Remember, these parties last for days, right? They last for days. And just like the parties that we have, they often start with a bang, right? They start off big, excitement. But over time, they fade. Something else is happening here, right? Instead of fading, all of a sudden, this party has been given new life. All that stress, all that shame, all that finger-pointing that all these people were feeling, it's been replaced. And it's been replaced with this metaphor of joy. But you know who got credit for what happened in the eyes of the party? Because when I read this, it seems like this miracle's gone over a lot of people's head. It certainly went over the chief steward's head. So it seems like the bride and groom got credit for what happened. When he writes about this event, there's an author, his name is Mark Batterson. He writes about this in a book called The Grave Robber. Super good. I would encourage you to check it out. And he writes about this, and he writes about this exact moment where the chief steward calls the groom back in and says, "You know, what did you do? Why did you switch this up?" And he says, "I'd love to see the sheepish smile on the bridegroom's face, because Jesus didn't just help him save face, he actually helped him put his best foot forward. Jesus didn't just save the day, he actually made the day. And that's what Jesus does best, right? He can turn our worst day into our best days. He always saves the best for last. And the raw materials for the first miracle are the most basic building block, right? It's a profound reminder that God doesn't need much to work with. He doesn't need anything. He does his best work that way. Jesus could have started with asking the servants to go grab some grapes and then expedited the fermentation, thank you. Process, right? Tim's here always to help me. And made that happen, and that still would have been a miracle, and we still would have celebrated that. But when Jesus uses water, the simplest thing, he's showing and he's demonstrating that he has the ability to take the simplest thing on earth and to turn it into something more beautiful, more flavorful. And if God can do that with water, how much more can he do then with us? Well, like I said, though, it feels like this miracle went over the people's heads. It feels like they missed it because only the servants and the disciples, it seems like they were the only ones that truly knew what happened. But I kind of think Jesus is okay with that because I think he's displaying his compassion, his love, his investment in this family. Jesus invested in us. And while I just spent so long building up this event, making you hopefully see that it was bigger than we often make it out to be, at its core, truth be told, it is still just a wedding. It's just a party. There's this element of shame and stress, and that's certainly not a good thing, and we don't want that. But Jesus isn't raising anyone from the dead here. He's not healing some incurable disease or giving someone sight. Much smaller than that. And I think it's much more beautiful because of that. Because this first miracle that happens in John is not about saving someone's life. It's simply about saving face. I think this miracle reveals just how much God is invested in the smallest details, and it reminds us, hopefully most of all, that God's good not just because there's nothing too big for him, but he's good because there's nothing too small for him as well. Unfortunately, though, I think we often are like the guests of the wedding. I think we miss it. I think we let these moments pass by us. I think it's because it's easy, right? We look for the flashy stuff. We like the resurrections. We like the healings. We like the blind receiving their sight. Those are easy to see. But sometimes we miss the other ways that God's at work. In the story, when the wine was brought to this master of the feast, he simply thought the groom switched the labels. He goofed up. He made a mistake. And he's almost teaching him a lesson, like, you know, next wedding, you got to get this right. You got to make sure you give the good stuff first and then the cheaper stuff. And John doesn't note how the crowd responds to this miracle, but I'm feeling like it's pretty similar to the master of the feast. Because after this miracle, there's no giant crowds following him like the feeding of the 5,000. There's no palm branches being laid where he walks. And perhaps most telling of all, there's no plots against his life at the end of this. I think it's because it's easy for us to look for these flashy miracles and miss the way that God's moving in our lives. And to help show that a little bit, I actually prepared just a very short video for you because I often think we're not aware of the way that God's moving. We only look for the big things. And so I wanted to show you just real quick an awareness test. I want to test all of you, how aware are you? And so that way we can see where to go from here, what's our next step. So tech team, feel free to play the awareness test real quick for us. That way I can know what's next.
This is an awareness test. How many passes does the team in white make?
Go!
The answer is 13.
Yes.
But did you see the moonwalking bear?
It's easy to miss something that you're not looking for. Be honest. Did you see the moonwalking bear? Because the first time I watched it, I missed it. I just cheered when they said 13, and I felt very proud. And then the next line just hit me like a pile of bricks. But that's how it is, right? It's easy to miss things that we're not paying attention for. We're so busy focused on the ball that we miss something just so obvious. How often are you looking for God? How often do you look for the ways that God's moving in your life? Because it's easy for us to miss it if we're not looking for it. The beautiful thing, though, is that like that video, once you see the moonwalking bear, you won't unsee him. The people that watched this video before, they know. That's no editing trick happening. The bear was there the whole time. But that's the thing. Once you're aware to it, you see him everywhere. You see him there, you see him here. Everywhere you go, you can't unsee now that moonwalking bear. And that's kind of my goal for you today. That's my hope. I hope you start seeing this moonwalking bear everywhere. I hope you start seeing God moving in the little things everywhere now. Because this miracle reveals to us that God is active in all aspects of life. But the real question is, are we aware of it? Are we following Jesus and doing what he says? Don't misunderstand me. The goal of this series is not to get you to become miracle chasers. It's not to get you to simply look for the miracle and thus miss the miracle maker. Instead, the goal is to encourage you to chase after Jesus. Because when we seek after Jesus, he demonstrates that when we follow him far enough and long enough, we're going to find ourselves in the midst of some miracles. With this one, Jesus demonstrated his ability to take the simplest thing on earth and to turn it into something even more beautiful and even more flavorful. And if he does that with water, what can he do with us? But it starts with following Jesus, and it starts with keeping our eyes peeled for moonwalking bears. And I think that kind of leads me to, now that the awareness test is over and I know our baseline, it kind of leads me to the how, or the so what. When you work in youth ministry for a while, you kind of learn that you can't just leave a sermon there. You can't just end it there because it will kind of fall flat. You got to add the so what. You got to add the practical. What can someone practically take? And so I started to think, okay, what are just some practical ways that we can become a church who keeps our eyes peeled for these God moments, these moonwalking bears? And I came up with two suggestions. The first one is this, and it's very simple, but very important. Call them out. When you see one, call it out. Don't think you are seeing things. Call it out when it happens. A family friend of ours, her name is Megan, and she worked for years in ministry, especially at Hume Lake. She has this great thing she does with her family that is super simple and super cheesy, and yet she explains how big of an impact it has, especially on our young kids. See, what they do is when they gather for dinner, the first thing they do as their conversation is they go around the table and they have these moments where they share what they call God sightings. So they share the ways that they've seen God move somewhere in their life or around them. And what Megan says is that not only does this small, cheesy activity actually bring her family closer to each other, but it actually keeps everyone on their toes. Because no one wants to show up at the table not doing their homework. People are on their toes. They're looking for the ways that God is at work. The second one is also pretty simple, but pretty straightforward as well. And it's simply this. Be a participant. Be a participant. It's not that crazy, but jump in. Be a dancing partner to the moonwalking bear. The beautiful thing is you don't even have to know how to moonwalk. You just have to have the courage and the willingness to be a part of something. We've been challenging you for a little while, and you may have seen it on the slides, but it's this challenge of what's one way that you can show God's love to someone in the church this week. Write them a letter, give them a phone call, an email, a text, even just a compliment. What's one way that you can show God's love to someone this week? How can you be a dance partner? Because when we live like Jesus, we start to find ourselves in the midst of these moonwalking bears or these miracles that are happening. And then finally, the last thing is this, and this is what I'm going to leave you with. The first miracle foreshadows the last. This very first miracle in John, it foreshadows the last. It foreshadows the resurrection. Because at the wedding in Cana, Jesus turned a simple glass of water into wine. And at the Lord's Supper, Jesus takes and raises a cup of wine and says, "This is my blood." You get this foreshadow happening. At the wedding of Cana, Jesus turned an ordinary jar of water into the world's best wine. But at the Lord's Supper, Jesus turned an ordinary glass of wine into a constant reminder and symbol for the endless grace he was giving us, for the blood he was pouring out for us. And so today, as we prepare to embark in the Lord's Supper, and we prepare to remember that, as you take the cup, remember the sinless blood that was poured out for you. Remember this foreshadow that's happening. Remember this greatest miracle of all. Will you join me as pray, and we'll transition into the second part. But as we move towards communion, be ready and prepare yourself for that. God, we just come before you today, humbled in your presence, as people that probably often miss the way that you are constantly at work around us. God, we just ask for awareness. We ask for awareness to see the ways that you are moving. And God, we ask that we can be participants as well. Have the courage to step in and to join the work that you are doing. Because I think you have big plans for us in this church. We just pray that we can continue to follow you and follow you in those plans as well. And so we pray this in your name. Amen.